back in February of this year, we invited you, our wonderful, enthusiastic community, to be part of the Plan Strong Test Kitchen and provide us with feedback around our all-new burger mixes. And I got to tell you, the feedback and support that you guys showed us blew us away, and we have been hard at work in the kitchen, and we now have our first program graduates, three delicious skillet burger mixes. We're going to be launching them into the universe so you can stock up ahead of Memorial Day weekend. You can check them out at planstrong.com. The three flavors are black bean, portobello mushroom, and our all-new sweet curry. Once mixed with 6 to 7 ounces of water or broth, the dough may be pan-fried, air-fried, or baked to a crispy, aromatic, rich golden brown. These mixes, they take the hard work out of making healthy burgers at home and yield quality results. They're whole grain, oil-free, a great source of protein and fiber, and they're made from a combination of ground oats, beans, seeds, and spices without any of the added sugar or excessive salt. I want to thank all of you for being such an important part of the Plant Strong Test Kitchen, and I know that you're going to love these as much as I do. Thanks so much. This week, we made a very difficult announcement that our 9th annual in-person Camp Plant Stock event in Black Mountain has been canceled for this summer. It's beyond sad for us to think about missing the event this year, but I want you all to know that the Plant Strong events team, we are working so hard right now to bring everyone the opportunity to join from home this year. And we're going to offer you a sneak peek just for our podcast listeners. We're going to be broadcasting live from August 14th to the 16th, right from the Esselstyn Family Farm. That's right, where it all began back in 2011. We can't wait to give you all a front row seat to this all-access weekend extravaganza. Stay tuned. We have a bunch to share with you, and I'm looking forward to sharing a weekend of great food, great rock and roll stars, and lots of fellowship with each and every one of you. I'll be announcing all the details very soon. Welcome to the Plant Strong Podcast. I want to start out by letting you know how pumped up I was at the response of last week's episode with Chef Ken Rubin. Thank you for sharing photos and the delicious results of buying new ingredients, cooking together as a family, and making some of the recipes that Ken and I talked about on the podcast. It was gratifying to know how many of you are jumping in and taking action in the kitchen and firing up the stovetop. I want this channel to continue to be a beacon of light in your life for respect and love, not just for yourself, but for each other. And we've decided to keep that momentum going this week with another chef. His name is Chef Del Schroff. If his name isn't familiar, his work will absolutely be. He's authored Forks Over Knives, the Cookbook, the China Study Quick and Easy Cookbook, the China Study Family Cookbook, and Better Than Vegan, which is the story of his struggle with weight loss and gain and how he managed to lose over 200 pounds on a whole food, low fat, plant-based diet. Now, not only does Del share some of his favorite practical cooking tips for common staples in the kitchen, like beans, potatoes, veggie stock, and even some low fat recipes for delicious cheese substitutes and guacamole, but he also talks openly about his continuing struggles with health and weight loss. Like many of us, Dell has fallen victim to overstress, overeating, and finding comfort in the wrong foods. I'm sure that this sounds familiar for many of us. He's in the middle of his own personal reset, just like so many of you might be. So let's do it together with love and empathy. His transparency may just be what we need to help us all right now. I want to welcome Chef Dell Schroef to the Plant Strong podcast. Dell, you and I, you know, I first met you back in 2009, believe it or not. 2009, I got invited to the Wellness Forum by Pam Popper to come talk about the release of my first book, The Engine 2 Diet. And that's when I first met you, wonderful, wonderful, gentle, appreciative Dell. And you were in the kitchen, if I'm not mistaken. And I think you were sitting there with your Crocs on, you're out, you're kind of your chef outfit on, and you had a, I think it was a, some sort of a grater. I think you were grating lemons or oranges, making zesting. And I just remember the minute I met you, I was like, this is a very special man. And you had such a special attitude towards life as well and your profession.
I remember, I have a picture of you and Pam and I in that kitchen. And the one thing I remember is I remember I made one of your recipes. I think your mac and cheese.
Yes, 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 yes.
And you accused me of changing your recipe because you said it tasted better than yours.
Well, now knowing what I know about you now, it doesn't surprise me. Not in the least. But so before we get into some, so what I want to do with you today, Dell, is I wanted to talk about some of the cookbooks that you've written, some of the successes that you've had with those. Then I'd love for our audience to hear about some of your kind of your tips and your tricks when it comes to cooking techniques. And I'll serve those up for you. And then on the tail end, I'd love to talk about, you know, personally, the path that you've been on, some of the struggles that you've had with eating and maybe with your health, and how other people that I'm sure that are out there are going through the same struggles, and what advice you might have for them by sharing your story. So let me launch in by asking you this question. Dell, so you've written, if I'm not mistaken, 4 different cookbooks. Is that correct? Maybe more, right. But I'm going to say 4. Let me list them off for you. You wrote the Forks Over Knives cookbook, the China Study Family cookbook, the China Study Quick and Easy cookbook, and Better Than Vegan cookbook. Does just me saying those make you exhausted?
Yes, it does. Well, and if you know the story about it, even the Forks Over Knives cookbook, I had 90 days to write that manuscript. So from the time I signed the contract to the time I turned it in, 300 recipes in 90 days.
I find that hard to believe.
But it explains a lot of what we'll talk about later about with health. I was writing Better Than Vegan when they approached me about Forks Over Knives. So I set that aside and dove into that cookbook. So it's a lot. That's 4 cookbooks in 4 years.
Well, that's insane. And, of all those cookbooks, I would imagine the one that has probably sold the best, it may not be your favorite, but the one that sold the best has been the Forks Over Knives cookbook, over 300 recipes. I mean, Dell, I want to set this up. You've got over 4,276 ratings, right, for that cookbook. You wrote that thing August 2012. It is consistently in the top 100, 200 of all books on Amazon. How did that book and the success of that book change your life?
Completely. You know, imagine, I never really thought about the possibility that a book like that would be successful. I can see selling cookbooks and using it as a platform for teaching, which I love doing and all that. But never did I foresee that it would be this springboard for a career in public speaking.
Yep.
For the amount of teaching that I get to do, and for actually taking the time off eventually to explore other possibilities. I mean, it still is my base income and allows me to do a lot of different things, including taking this time now to work on my own health. So I never, who knew, right? Even Brian and I talked, Brian Wendell, who is co-owner of Forks Over Knives, we talk once a year. We're like, who knew? We both sit there and sort of laugh about it.
Well, it is really phenomenal. And I think that the success that you've had, I want people to know that, you know, what you did there is you hit gold, and not many books that are written have that kind of success. I would say it's less than 0.05% of all books do what that book did.
Yeah, 37 weeks on the New York Times bestsellers list. 37 weeks for a first-time author.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I wrote a good cookbook, but I also think that Forks Over Knives is an amazing marketing machine.
Yeah.
And I think the timing and the whole movement was ripe for what we were putting out there. You know, people were watching that movie and going, well, what do I do now? You know, and it still is a book that people are giving to other people once they see that movie.
Yeah. No, I've got it right here in front of me. I've got it on the Kindle version. So what I want to do now for our listeners is just give them some great takeaways when it comes to cooking and just some of the basics. So I'm going to throw out some, hopefully these are like, you know, nice lobs for you to swing at, but the first one is, you know, especially now that everybody's quarantined, we're at home, people are cooking a lot more. I find that veggie stocks are very, very important. In fact, you know, as you know, I've got a line of food products that's currently sold exclusively at Whole Foods. Our best selling product of everything is the veggie stock, right?
Right.
And so I'm wondering, like, what would you tell people? What's the best way to make your own basic veggie stock?
Well, the popularity of veggie stocks might be because of all the classes I teach, the number one best-selling cooking class is soups class.
Whoa.
Okay. It's more of that than any other class. So people have this affinity for soups. But having said that, when I teach that class, I always tell people, look, don't go out and buy a whole bunch of ingredients just for your veggie stock. Start with the recipe that you're going to make and see what are the trimmings that you can use there for that.
Mm.
Or you're cooking other meals throughout the week. So, for example, if you cook garbanzo beans from scratch and aren't going to make aquafaba, which is a whole other conversation, you can take that broth and make that the starter for your veggie stock for the week. Great flavor, you know, really neutral, blah, 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 do whatever you want with it. Throw that and take all of your onion trimmings when you're cooking throughout the week and your carrot trimmings, put those in a bag, throw them in the freezer if you want to.
Yeah.
And then once a week, you pull them out and throw them into your vegetable stock and you're good to go.
So what would you say are like, what are the basic ingredients that every veggie stock should have?
Onions, carrots, celery are my top three.
Yep.
Leeks are good. Potato trimmings, parsley, bay leaf, garlic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I always throw in a handful of green lentils into my vegetable stock. It just gives it a little bit of a richness that makes it nice.
So you do the green lentils right in the beginning and just let it kind of...
Because you're going to cook them for about an hour, and that's long enough to cook out the lentils and pull out their flavor.
Ah, that's really cool.
Basic. And what you don't want to put into your veggie stock, avoid putting things like your spices and herbs in at the beginning because they tend to get bitter when they sit in there. So save those for, and by doing that, you keep your soup flavor or your stock flavor neutral and then adaptable to whatever you're going to make with it.
I like it. I like it. Veggie stack. Veggie stack. Home run, baby. Right. Now, so I don't know if I heard this quote from you or my mother, Ann, or if it was Julia Childs that said this, or Chef AJ, right? But everything starts with an onion, okay?
I'm right there.
Are you right there? You agree with that?
Yeah.
All right.
And in part because when you – so this whole way of cooking is about getting rid of the oil. It used to be that everything started with butter or oil, right? We sauteed everything in that, and we don't do that anymore. So you're looking to build layers and layers of flavor, and onions are just a great way to start that whole thing off.
Yeah, and so if that's the case, what would you say is the – what's the best way to caramelize an onion? Because that's typically what – you know, one of the first things that we want to teach somebody, right?
Yeah, well, it used to be that we would take our onions and put them in a pan with oil and then just let it cook down for hours or however long we wanted to let it cook down, 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
But you can do the same thing without the oil. So you chop up your onions, you throw them in the pan, and then put a lid on it in the beginning. And what that does is steam those onions so they don't stick to the pan. Check on them every now and then to make sure that you've got your heat not too high. Medium-low heat. Stir it every now and then, and then leave them alone until they turn that color you want to turn them, and they'll get there.
So you don't want to maybe start on medium low, let them kind of like seep out a little bit, and then go up to like high for 2 minutes. That's what I always do. Is that a mistake?
You don't need to. I mean, I think patience is the key with them. It's one of the things. It's like cooking rice or cooking beans. Yeah, put them on there and leave them alone.
Right. Right. So. Sauteing. You mentioned sauteing. What's the difference between a dry versus a water saute?
Well, my dry saute is a water saute. It's just that I don't add the water in the beginning. And the advantage of that, when you're using high water content vegetables like onions and carrots and celery, etc., mushrooms even, you don't need that water in the beginning. Once they start cooking, those vegetables will release water on their own and sort of protect themselves from the burning pan. So that that water comes out, you start concentrating the flavor, and that's what you want to do, is pulling the water out, concentrates the flavor in those vegetables. And then if you need to, you can add a tablespoon or two full of water to the pan towards the end of cooking. Just to keep them from sticking, but only if you need to. Sometimes when you have a lot of vegetables in the pan, you can do that whole thing without adding any water.
Yep. Let's talk about beans for a second. Do you like beans?
Yeah, you can't do this without them. I mean, you can, but life is a lot easier to manage hunger with beans in the world.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite bean personally?
My top three, probably chickpeas up there number one. And then I eat a lot of black beans just because I do. And then cannellini beans, I love. Great flavor, creamy bean, delicious flavor.
So I'm surprised you picked chickpea as your number one. I find chickpea is such a, to me, it's such a vanilla kind of, I don't know, I'm going to say boring. You know, I think of hummus and I think of, but it's very versatile, for sure.
Yeah, it's not the bean, it's what you do with it.
Yes, it is, isn't it? That's the key.
Well, enough that allows you to have that versatility in the same way cannellini beans are. You can do anything with either of those beans that you want to. That's kind of the joy of it. Whereas a black bean starts to get a little bit more particular in its flavor and its outcome. So a whole different conversation.
So with beans, are you a snob as far as, do you ever use canned beans or is that like sacrilege?
I do use canned beans. And I'll tell you why, I live alone. So, you know, the idea of cooking a big pot of beans that I may or may not eat, it just seems kind of silly. Although you can make a big pot of beans and then freeze part of them if you want to do that.
Yeah.
But, I think it's nice to have. I do both. So I do cook from dry. And then I have canned beans on hand just for that convenience factor. You know what? It's whatever makes this easier.
Right.
Is what we're all about, right? And there's nothing unhealthy about canned beans.
Yep. Yep. When we buy canned beans, we typically try and opt for the no salt added canned beans.
Oh yeah. Oh, I think you always want to opt for no salt so that you can control how much you add to your food.
Yeah. Yeah. So when it comes to cooking beans, let's say I'm not going to go the canned route. I want to cook my beans, get a lot of flavor out of them. Do you have any like tips or suggestions for cooking beans?
Well, it's funny. My 93-year-old dad, we learned how to cook together when my parents got divorced. And a big pot of beans was one of those first things that he learned how to cook. And back then it was your beans, your bay leaf, and this big old chunk of ham hock. So I don't cook with a ham hock anymore, but whenever I cook beans and take them over to him, he always has a little chunk of meat in the refrigerator that he adds to his. It's just the way the, but I think beans, I do think there's some advantage to soaking your beans overnight. And then pouring off that water and starting with fresh water.
Yep.
I often add, especially for like my chickpeas and my white beans, I'll take half an onion and I'll put a couple of whole cloves studded into the onion and put that into the pot along with a bay leaf and then some fresh parsley or a sprig of thyme just to season those beans. And then let them cook as long as they take and then take out those little things that you added in there.
I love that little trick. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Those little nuanced, you know, Chef Del tricks.
Like a child for you right there.
Yeah. Okay. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Good. Well, let's give her credit where credit, you know. So beans, if I'm in a hurry, but I want to cook my beans, I don't want to do the overnight thing so much. Is there a trick there?
There's the quick, what do they call that? The quick soak method is to put your beans on with water. And you usually want 3 times the amount of water as you have beans.
Okay.
Bring that to a boil, turn it off and let it sit for an hour. Drain that water off, start with fresh water, and then go ahead and cooking as usual.
Oh, got it. And so that boiling it for an hour or whatever, that really helps them along.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Having said that, I've also cheated and just thrown a pot into the thing with water and let them cook until they're done. Okay. I'm not against the whole cheating thing.
Yeah. So Del, you're going to have for dinner tonight, I'm just going to say you're going to have your chickpeas, however you want them, over some sort of a grain. What grain are you gonna pick? What's like one of your top two grains?
You'll always find brown basmati rice in my cabinet, and then you'll find quinoa. Number three would be millet. Now I don't eat millet as a side dish as much, but I have a lot of recipes I use it for. But quinoa is great because it's 15 minutes from stove to dinner.
Yeah.
You need that last minute finish. You have it to go. But I've grown up with brown rice. I've eaten it most of my life, and it's kind of my go-to buddy.
Yeah. Brown rice it's very familiar.
Right.
What do you think of like one of the things that I've been cooking just the last 2 weeks, and I've had it probably 4 times in the last 2 weeks, is pearl barley. I find barley to be just, it's got a really nice texture and flavor.
I've never been a fan. I've cooked with it. There's some barley recipes in the Forks Over Knives cookbook.
Yeah.
It's a very Eastern European grain.
Yeah.
But it has its fans for sure. I get asked that question a lot. People are like, what about barley? Why don't you use barley? I'm like,
right. What about farro? You feel the same way about farro?
I make a wonderful jambalaya with farro that I like a lot. It's a great dish I've eaten. It's a chewy grain. You wanna slow down the eating process as you eat some farro, right? You're gonna chew that for a while.
My mother, and makes a farro salad that, oh, it's so nice.
I've made one too with dried cherries and orange juice and orange zest.
Yes.
Shallots. Ann and I are simpatico, by the way. We have a lot of the same taste in food, I think.
I think you do too.
Move in with your mother and let her cook for me any day.
Well, that farro dish that you just talked about, that sounds like a really nice summer dish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and in fact, this time of year, I don't have air conditioning in my house, so you don't see much cooking going on. It's all about the salads right now. And yep. Beans and grains are great foundations for salad because they're so filling.
Yeah. So when it comes to grains, what are your thoughts on these 1 or 2 minute frozen, you know, rice or quinoas that you can buy and then, you know, throw in the microwave or in a saute pan?
I have no problem with them. I use them as long as they, you have to watch out and make sure they don't have any added oil.
Right.
It's one of the only issues I have that you want to look out for. But I use them.
Yeah.
They're perfectly fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any
easier, as long as they're not, you know, making, as long as they're not unhealthy, yeah. Go for it.
We reached out to our friends at Wild Earth to provide us with more details about the best diet for dogs. And the truth is, like us, dogs have evolved over the millennia to not only enable them to digest plant-based starches, but to thrive on foods that include a wide variety of ingredients, including fruits and vegetables and herbs, grains, meats, poultry, fish, and more, making them true omnivores. So when you're trying out some of Chef Dell's new recipes for potatoes and grains, know that Wild Earth dog food is also providing the same healthy, clean protein and high fiber goodness in their dog food formula. We applaud the team at Wild Earth for redefining healthy food for our canine friends. Try a bag today and save 40% off your first order. Please visit wildearth.com or amazon.com and use the code PLANTSTRONG, one word.
So you gave us that cool little trick with the, you know, the onion with the garlic inside that you put in there with the bay leaf in the with the beans. Any particular tricks when it comes to like rice or quinoa, two of your favorites?
Well, I would say there's, you know, you talk about building flavor, you know, water tends to dilute flavor. Your vegetable stock tends to create flavor. So why not cook your grains with vegetable stock?
Uh-huh. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. Why not cook them with your vegetable stock? You can add in, you could do that same onion and clove thing or other spices, you know, in Persia, the whole art of, what's the name of the dish? A pilaf.
Yeah.
It originated is about, they would toast the rice in oil with other spices. Hmm. You can do something similar. You don't want to toast an oil-free rice for too long because it makes it too chewy and won't cook. But you can toast your spices that you add to it and still have a lovely, flavorful dish.
Yeah. You know, I had an old girlfriend, she actually helped with the recipe section of the Engine 2 diet. And she loved to cook, but she would take like basmati rice and she'd put it in a warm skillet until it started to pop. And then she'd add the water. She'd add the frozen corn, the frozen, you know, carrots, beans. And so all that kind of cooked together in one big skillet.
Yeah. That's a classic, pilaf technique in Indian cooking as well. Building on flavor.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what we're trying to do when we're not using, you know, all the salt and all the oil and all the, you know,
I think that's the key is looking for other ways to make flavor happen that are healthful and not hurtful.
Healthful, not hurtful. You heard it from Chef Dell. I like it. Let me ask you this, because just like you said earlier, like, you know, beans, you know, whew, man, you got to, you know, if you're not eating the beans, this could be a tough lifestyle. What about potatoes? What's your take on potatoes?
Look, they've identified populations around the world that get the majority of their calories from potatoes and sweet potatoes. The Okinawans get 67% of their calories from sweet potatoes. Yeah. Dr. Popper's identified a group that gets over 90% from sweet potatoes. Yeah. So obviously you can survive and thrive on that food, as Dr. McDougall would gladly say to us, right, if he were here.
Yes.
They're not the demon. That's the problem, is we demonize foods that don't deserve demonizing. Potatoes are not the problem. They really are a good foundational food, especially if you don't like beans.
Yeah. Right? I agree with you 100%. In our house, you'll always find Yukon Gold potatoes, sweet potatoes, you know, russet potatoes. Do you have a favorite potato that you like to cook with or eat?
I always have russets in the house. They just always seem to be the standard that I grew up with. And I'll tell you why. When I was in school, I wasn't vegetarian when I was in college, but I ate a lot of vegetarian food because it was so cheap. So I would eat a big pot of curried lentils, but I would also buy potatoes, because you can buy a 10-pound bag of even organic potatoes for under $4 on sale sometimes. 40 cents a pound, right? $4 is an organic bag of potato chips that I could eat in about 40 minutes. Right? So potatoes, man, they're just a powerhouse on all kinds of levels. Yeah. And they take on whatever you want to do with them, they do.
So what are some of your favorite ways of cooking potatoes, creating, you know, some sort of a potato dish?
Let's go back to the basic soup dish. Potato leek soups is one of those easy, easy soups that take no time or effort to make. You take a 3 or 4 leeks, and you want to rinse them and slice through them and then rinse them out, cut off the dark green parts of it, and then chop up the rest, put that into your pan, let that saute a little bit. You'll need a little bit of water to saute those. Let that saute, add a little bit of thyme to that, some dried thyme or fresh, and then add your diced potatoes and your vegetable stock and let that cook for 25-30 minutes until the potatoes are tender, season with salt and pepper, and you're good to go.
That sounds
right.
Yes.
And adaptable. This time of year, when corn is in season, we'll throw some corn in there. A red bell pepper would go in there just as well and give you a little bit of a variety. So it's an easy soup to do.
Yeah.
And oven roasted potatoes. Now, the oil free
potatoes,
they're so easy. One of my tricks is you always want to parboil them first. All right. You parboil them and then you rough them up a little bit.
So let me ask you, stop, time out. For when you say parboil, what does that mean?
You're going to take your potatoes and cube them or dice them or whatever you want to do and put them in water to cover and bring that to a boil and let it cook for 2-3 minutes.
Okay.
Just to start the cooking process. And then you're going to take them and drain the water off. Put them into a bowl, and again, you'll take a fork and kind of rough them up. And it's that roughing up, that little crags and nuts and things that are going to caramelize and give you flavor.
Okay.
So then you can season that. Salt, pepper, onion powder, garlic powder, paprika. Throw that onto a sheet pan and let it bake until brown and crispy.
What temperature do you like?
350. Keep it, don't go too hot. And I tell you what, you got to be careful. Like 350 is a good temperature, because with oil-free, foods go from cooked to overcooked really easily and not in a fun way. The texture changes and all that, and it's not as good.
Right. What about if I'm just going to do like a simple baked potato? Do you like cover it in aluminum foil and throw it in the oven, or what do you think?
No, I tend to poke mine with a fork a few times so it doesn't explode, throw it in the rack and then throw it in the oven, and then we're good to go. Mm. And then, you know, what you do with a baked potato is up to you. I have taken them on the road with me when I'm traveling 3 or 4 hours just to have something to keep hunger at bay. But generally, I tend to like toppings for my baked potato. I like a baked potato bar, is what I'm saying.
Yes, yes.
So, and that could be anything you want. You know, I put black bean chili on it sometimes. I make a broccoli bisque and serve over that sometimes. You know, or a good roasted corn and red pepper salsa. You know, so there's all kinds of ways to dress up. It's a blank slate, you know, so make it into whatever you want it to be and have at it.
Well, in the show notes for this, we'll have to put in some of these recipes.
Sure.
Because it's making my mouth water right now thinking about it. And I haven't had lunch yet.
Uh-oh. I did have my big salad a little bit just before you came on.
Nice, nice. Let me ask you, first let me say, Del, you're such a wealth of knowledge. It's so fun talking to you right now. What do you think a squash is? Whether it's, you know, butternut, acorn, kombucha, and what are your thoughts on those and then cooking them?
Squashes are the holy trinity in American foods. Squash, beans, and corn are what our the people who lived here before us gave to us as a gift. And, you know, they really are a gift because squash is one of those foods that will keep you through the harsh winter.
Mm.
If you have a cool place in the basement to store them, you can throw that butternut squash, those heavy, heavy, thick winter squashes down there, and they'll get you through the winter into spring. Having said that, they're, you know, quite versatile. You have your summer squashes like zucchini, that are great for a quick saute or for adding into your salads and the like. And then you have like your kombucha, or not kombucha, your butternut squash and acorn squash and all of those, which are perfect for stews and casseroles and things like that throughout the winter.
Yeah.
Hearty, hearty food.
Now, when you cook like a butternut or an acorn, do you slice it in half and then put it on the parchment paper, you know, in the oven, or how do you cook those?
Take a butternut squash or your acorn squash and just cut it in half and scoop out the seeds.
Yep.
Save the seeds because you can clean those and toast them.
Mm.
I always want to season that scooped out place. So I'll take a couple of sage leaves and a couple of cloves of garlic and put up under there and set that down on top of that and let it cook so that you steep that flavor into your squash.
Delicious.
And then you want to add a little bit of water to the pan, usually maybe a half inch of water, just so that they don't burn too easily, and let it go sometimes half hour, 45 minutes or an hour, depending on the squash.
Got
and
it.
Its size.
So you're not putting down parchment paper, you're putting in the water, and then
I like the water better. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it. Like it. What about, so vegetables, I find that one of the keys to making, for me personally, making vegetables really over the top palatable, especially the ones that work, are roasting them. I find it brings out their flavor. Are you a fan of roasting veggies, and what veggies do you like to roast?
I do like roasting vegetables, and I tend to be, you know, I think sometimes I need to widen my own view of the world of vegetables, because I find myself cooking the same ones over and over again. If there were only one vegetable in the world, I would hope that it's Brussels sprouts.
Really?
Oh yeah. I know that I'm the minority there, but I eat Brussels sprouts every day, and roasted, they're just amazing. But onions, carrots, potatoes, Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cauliflower, beets are delicious roasted, and oil freeze a little bit more of a challenge, but what I tend to do is to make up a really light marinade, and a really good friend of mine and one of my catering clients does this. She uses apple juice as part of the marinade for her roasted vegetables. And what happens is just enough apple juice in the bottom of that pan, as it cooks down and concentrates, caramelizes your vegetables.
So now I'm a little confused. Let me tell you why.
Because
whenever I think of roasting vegetables, I think of putting them on the parchment paper. And now you're saying you also put down a little bit of applesauce down on top of the parchment paper?
juice.
I'm sorry. That's what I meant.
Yeah, apple juice. Yeah, it's the apple juice, and it's not a lot, but it's enough that when, again, it evaporates, and the natural sugars that are left over help to caramelize your vegetables.
I like that a lot. And I got to tell you, I'm singing your song when it comes to the Brussels sprouts. I too love roasted Brussels sprouts. It's my favorite way to eat them.
You can't go wrong.
Yeah. And then what do you do as far as seasoning with your Brussels sprouts?
I'm sometimes just a salt and pepper guy, but sometimes a little bit of nutritional yeast if I want it. But yeah, I don't need much.
Right. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about cheese substitutes. What? Yeah. Do you have any favorite cheese substitutes besides kind of like, you know, the typical nutritional yeast or ground cashews?
I have two.
Yep.
I have two recipes that I created for maybe two different cookbooks. I make my own mock Parmesan.
Ooh.
And it uses toasted sesame seeds and toasted cashews and nutritional yeast.
Yep.
And I'll toast those and grind them all up with salt and use that and use that as a Parmesan cheese topping. It's really good. And the other, and if you want to post the recipe, is my absolute favorite cheese sauce is one that I created using potatoes as the base.
Yep.
And I found this recipe online, and the original recipe had a half a cup of oil and then another half a cup of cashews in it. And I thought, oh my God, I could never make that just with all that fat. So I made my version, has no oil, 2 tablespoons each of roasted cashews, no, of raw cashews and tahini, and then some peppers and nutritional yeast, and it's delicious.
So like what? You mean like red bell peppers or green bell peppers?
A quarter cup of red bell pepper, 2 tablespoons each of cashews and tahini, and then 3 or 4 tablespoons of nutritional yeast and a pinch of lemon juice, and then your potatoes. And you boil your potatoes with your cashews. Throw all that into a blender and puree it, season it with salt to taste, and it'll knock almost any cheese sauce I've tried off the market, in part because it's much cheaper to make your own than to buy it.
Yeah.
It's much healthier. So I make everything from mac and cheese, fajitas. What else do I do with that? Just a little bit of air on your plain baked potato, right? Broccoli cheese, broccoli and rice casserole.
How can you remember all these recipes and these quantities? Especially, it sounds to me like I could be wrong, but when I'm not in there doing something, you know, day after day, if I take like a couple months break, you know, it seems to kind of leave me a little bit. And it sounds like you've taken a break. I mean,
yeah. Well, there are probably recipes that I would have to go and look up to make them, but there are recipes that, you know, I was in a commercial kitchen cooking since 1989 until 2 years ago. And so, you know, like, and I owned a bakery for 4 years, and unfortunately I could bake you a cake without even measuring. And so it's a scary place for me to be. I don't go there very often, but I'll stick with you. And then there are times, somebody will ask me about a recipe and I'll go, is that one of mine? And they'll go, yeah, forks over knives, page 212. I'll be like, oh, okay. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Let me ask you about what's your opinion on cauliflower? I find cauliflower is kind of it's kind of the new kid on the block. It seems like it's really versatile. I mean, are you a fan of cauliflower?
I created my first cream sauce for the Forks Over Knives cookbook using cauliflower. I use it to make one of the best lasagnas I've ever made.
It's a
cookbook. But I make a cauliflower bechamel, which is a white sauce using cauliflower and a little bit of pine nuts and thyme and pinch of nutritional yeast. It really, really creamy. It's really, really flavorful. And I'm a huge fan. It really is.
Well, it's so funny you say that because I just happen to have that up here right now. And I'm gonna read the rest of the ingredients right now. One large head of cauliflower cut into florets, about 3 cups. Unsweetened plain almond milk, as needed. 1 medium yellow onion, peeled and diced small. 2 cloves of garlic, peeled and minced. 2 teaspoons of minced thyme. 1/4 cup finely chopped basil. 1/4 cup nutritional yeast, optional. 1/4 teaspoon ground nutmeg, and then salt and freshly ground black pepper to taste. So those are the ingredients. Add to a big old pot, add water to cover, bring to a boil over high heat, and cook for about 10 minutes, and then drain the excess water. Man, yeah. That's a winner.
That's good stuff.
It's amazing stuff.
You know what? It's another one of those versatile recipes that you can do anything with. You toss it with pasta. You make lasagna with it. Throw it on a baked potato, whatever you want.
Yeah.
You know, use it as a thickener for taking and making a cream-based soup. So very, very versatile. I really try to teach that in my cooking, of taking one recipe and knowing how to use it as a foundational place. And people in the beginning are a little more scared of that, but I think as they go along in their journey, they start to see and understand that.
Yeah. You ever do cauliflower steaks? That's kind of, or just like one of the things we do, and my kids love them, is we just take frozen cauliflower cutlets, throw them on a parchment paper, you know, season them with, you know, nutritional yeast, a little bit of Bragg's liquid aminos, throw them in there for 30 minutes at, you know, 350, 375. We're diving in and that thing's done in 4 minutes.
I can't tell you what cookbook they're in, but yeah. I did a cauliflower steak recipe somewhere in some cookbook.
Yeah.
I serve it with a chimichurri sauce, which is a green, like parsley and lemon kind of a thing.
Yeah. 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 Man,
you're
inspired. This conversation is inspiring me to make at least, you know, 5 or 6 of the,
get out of the box, get out of the rut and do something a little bit different, huh?
That's true. It's true. I mean, just to give you an example, just a couple of weeks ago, I had Ken Rubin on the podcast, you know, from the Ruby Cooking School.
Yeah.
And he talked about this red lentil dal Ethiopian dish. I've had it 4 times since.
Yeah, I make one similar to his. It's delicious, right?
Delicious.
Yeah, good food.
And simple.
Well, I think that's kind of the thing to start talking to people about is this isn't a complicated way of eating or cooking or living.
Yeah.
It does not have to be complicated. It's not about all day in the kitchen kind of, because I don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe 45 minutes a day in the kitchen.
Yeah.
At the most.
Wow. do you have a favorite pizza crust recipe that you recommend for people?
There's a whole wheat crust in Better Than Vegan. It's just, you know, your water, yeast, sea salt, pinch of sugar, and whole wheat bread flour.
Yeah.
Pizza crust, it's another one of those foundational recipes that I think that you can adapt however you want. In other words, you want about half of your flour in that recipe to be a wheat flour because of the gluten, but yeah. Then you can use the rest of it. It can be rye flour, it can be flours if you want to make it more versatile. But yeah, I mean, it's easy. It's a cup and a half of water and a package of dry yeast and a tablespoon of sugar just to activate your yeast.
Yeah.
Probably somewhere close to 3 cups of your whole wheat flour and a teaspoon of salt and you need that for 7 or 8 minutes and you got pie crust.
There. Do you ever, what do you think of oat flour? Do you use that at all in some of these things? No.
Not really. And in part, I'm not gluten-free, but no, I haven't. Now, I've made things like maybe an oat bar or something like that where you grind up the oats, but not so much.
Yeah. I know that we've been using oat flour a lot lately for pancakes and waffles and stuff of that nature. And like you, we're not gluten-free, but we like to say we're wheat proud.
Yeah, me too. Although, you know, and I'm your mom and I talked about this once, the last time I talked to her about eating. I try to eat oatmeal every day for breakfast. I'm trying to keep those arteries cleaned out, you know. And she's like, Del, can you eat oatmeal every day? I'm like, yeah, I get it. And I do, in part because of her. And I grew up eating it, so I like it.
So speaking of oatmeal and speaking of my mother, do you have a favorite way of preparing your oatmeal? Do you like steel cut oats, old fashioned oats, oat groats? Because there's a, you know, a lot of variety there.
I tend to be the regular rolled oats guy. Now there are those that say those are processed and you don't get as much benefit from the, you know what? There's a lot of fiber in those oats one way or another. They do the job I think they're meant to do. So I usually take about a cup of water half a cup of water and a cup of oats.
Yeah.
And put a little bit of cinnamon in there and a pinch of salt and let those cook for 5 minutes and I'm done.
Right.
It's a simple, easy, easy breakfast. And I pour almond milk over it and sometimes maple syrup or sometimes some fresh fruit or whatever. But I tend to like it kind of simple.
All right. I got just like one or two more food related questions and then I want to dive into you and your journey. When my mother Anne found out that you and I were going to be talking today, she went back. She must have sent me, no exaggeration, 8 different emails that you guys had exchanged over the last probably 6, 7, 8 years. And just everyone, she's like, oh my gosh, Del is the sweetest human being on the face of the planet. But she wanted me to ask you this question. This is from Anne. What is Del's favorite best suggestion for a no nuts, low sodium sauce?
You can take either, if I were making one today, I would use my cheese sauce recipe and leave the nuts out of it. There's no reason you have to have it. What makes that sauce creamy is you take that starchy potato and puree it in a blender and it gets creamy on its own. The bechamel sauce, the cauliflower bechamel sauce, might even be better. You can leave the nuts out of that. That cauliflower gets creamy on its own with a little help. So those would be two good ones for me.
Gotcha. What about your not-so-fat guacamole that you have?
I love that recipe because you take, I can't eat a lot of avocado.
Yeah.
It literally makes my stomach a little bit unhappy. So I use, in some recipes, I'll use some broccoli in place of some of the avocado, steam it, and then puree that all together, and then add your guacamole flavorings, your cumin or your lemon juice or whatever, and it's delicious.
And I think you also use some edamame in that recipe.
Edamame too, yeah, either one.
Yeah.
Gives you a healthier version of guacamole. I'm amazed at how much avocado people can eat. Maybe it's just my age, but my body. Yeah. Are you? Well.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can pound it.
The difference. You probably go out and will burn it off in the first hour of exercise. Later, you know. For me, it's just sort of sitting there.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about peas? Peas also work as a.
They're a little stronger flavor, but once you season them, sure.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
All right. Let's dive in. Let's dive into Del for a sec. So okay. I know, I think you said you've been vegetarian/vegan for 22 years now?
So 1997. So what is that?
23
years. Yeah.
Almost 23 years.
Yeah.
And would it be fair to say that your health has kind of waxed and weaned over the years?
Yeah. I think it has a lot. I first went vegan in 1997 and gained 200 pounds. And it freaks people out when I say that. But, you know, I opened a bakery and I went to work 100 hours a week running a bakery and making bread and some really amazing pastries every day. And that's where I found myself, right? And you give up self-care to take on some projects. Like you'll rescue your child first before putting the mask on to save yourself. And that's kind of what I did. And so 3 years later, I was 200 pounds heavier. 4 years after I opened it, I quit. So yeah,
it's for health reasons. Is that why? Reasons,
I was exhausted. I was exhausted. And I used to get up at 1 o'clock on Saturday mornings at this market that we were in and start baking bread. And I would work till 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock the next afternoon and then go home and just die and crash. Right. And so it was just a really not a very fun way to do anything.
No.
So that was the beginning of that part of a very different journey. The next 4 years, I was home. I did a personal chef service. So I would deliver meals 3 days a week and then spend the rest of the time recovering from working because I weighed almost 500 pounds. And believe me, it's not easy to do much of anything at 500 pounds. I did that for.
Can I ask you this though? So how do you get to 500 pounds? I mean, do you know how you got there? Is it just are you just like eating copious amounts of
I think it's eating the not necessarily even copious amounts, but a lot of the wrong foods.
Yeah.
And we talk about calorie density all the time, but if you think about, I'll give you an example. One of my favorite recipes in the bakery was this thing called a dream bar. The dream bar is a shortbread crust with homemade caramel, chocolate chips, coconuts, and pecans all layered into a bar. Now listen, a bar about this size.
Yeah, yeah.
I finally did the nutritional information on it. Was 550 calories and 65 grams of fat.
Wow. Yeah.
That's how that happens, right? It doesn't take much. And we know the body loves to store fat. It's an easy, easy thing to do.
Yeah.
But, I remember, and even this last time, we can talk about that too, the last time that I gained a lot of weight, which happened in the past couple of years, I remember waking up one day and going, what happened? When did this happen? It's not like I was looking at every pound and going, oh, gained another pound a day, which maybe I should have been, right?
So did you, is this something as in your mind as simple as you just being caught in the pleasure trap where you just like gravitate towards these more calorie dense?
I think once you're in that mode, yes. I think that the attractiveness of rich foods and high flavored foods is hard to ignore.
And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's easily it.
And so, I mean, you worked at the William Wellness Forum. You know Pam Popper. I think the answers and the solution. And I can tell you there's certain items that I don't want to have in my house because if they're there, I'm going to be drawn to them like a moth to flame. So, but knowing what you know, is it fair to say that the pull or the draw to those foods is so strong that you still have them in your house?
No. You'd be surprised at how clean my house is if you came over here now. What is accessible is the age of delivery.
Okay.
And I live in Columbus is a food city, much like Austin is. And there are 200 restaurants that could be delivered to my door in less than an hour. And most of them have vegan options, not healthy vegan options, but vegan options.
Yep.
So I can remember, I can sit on my couch, which is 4 feet away from the door, plug into that phone app, order dinner, and get up and go to the door and get it and sit back down, and there I am. Yeah. And that's what happened. I burn out. When I left the Wellness Forum, I was so burnt out that I literally sat on this couch for 2 years. You know, I staring at the wall some days and just exhausted, not realizing. I think that's one of the keys that you have to tune into is this isn't just about the food choices that you make, but the mental construct that allows you to give yourself permission to do that day in and day out, even when it hurts.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So what year did you leave the Wellness Forum?
Two years ago. So 2018 in October, September.
Hmm. And you were working let me tell me if this is correct. You were working at the Wellness Forum and you wrote those cookbooks?
Yes.
Oh my goodness gracious.
I would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning when I got the contract for Forks Over Knives, and I would get up and write recipes and all of that. I'd go into work around 9 or 10 a.m. and work until whenever, and then come home and edit and test recipes until 11 o'clock at night.
That's what do you think was driving you so hard?
Well, I one, there was a really nice contract staring me in the face and a deadline. And Brian, it's funny, Brian and I, several years later, had this conversation, and he goes, because, you know, his friend and partner, Darshana, wrote her first cookbook and spent a year and a half writing it or something like that. Yeah. And I told him, I'm like, how did she get a year and a half to write this cookbook? And I got 90 days. He goes, well, why didn't you say something? I'm like, because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I had no, I'm like, okay, 90 days is how you write a cookbook.
Yeah.
So and I paid the price for it. You know, I was doing my day job and doing that too. And man, that was
so you have the luxury now where you don't have to be, you know, slugging it out at the Wellness Forum. You're not having to write another cookbook. So what is like getting you back, right, to where you want to be health-wise? What does that look like? Do you have a game plan? Do you have a strategy?
Yeah, in fact, you know, I've been bragging to my Facebook Live page that I may be the only person on Facebook who has not gained weight during this whole quarantine session. I've really put the energy into, one, getting back in the kitchen. It's part of why I created my Facebook Live page. It's like, look, if I go in and cook for people on a period, then I have healthy food to eat, right? And I guarantee you can't gain weight on my cooking. It's oil-free, no fat, whole foods cooking. And so starting to do that really started to make a difference. And I've been really, really committing myself to, one, a routine, which I've never really had before and I'm not really good at. So I know that every day I'm going to eat a great big salad. I'm going to eat oatmeal for breakfast. I'm going to eat a great big salad for lunch. And then
what does that salad look like? What do you like?
One of those 5 ounce bags of like romaine lettuce or mixed greens or somehow, and they have shredded carrots and cabbage in them.
Yep.
And then I add usually chickpeas and red onion. I've got an herb garden out back, so there might be some fresh herbs that go in there. What else do I add to that? Sometimes pepper.
Do you have a favorite salad dressing you put on there?
Well, my friend, our buddy Chef AJ just sent me a sample of one of those balsamic vinegars, and it was a curry flavor, and I'm in love. It's salad dressing all by its own. But, you know, when I did one of your events,
yes,
I had a vinegar place there, and I bought a case of this cilantro and roasted garlic vinegar.
Yeah.
I use that as my salad dressing all the time.
Yeah, it's amazing what they're doing with vinegars these days and how versatile and useful they can be.
I love it. I love it because you get all the flavor and none of the guilt.
Yeah. That's good. So, okay, I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were talking about your big salad, oatmeal for breakfast, and then what about dinner?
Dinners have become quick stir fries. Now, every now and then, like, you know, last week, it's getting warm here in Ohio. Not Austin warm, but it's getting warm for me. And so there's less cooking going on. But last week when I was cooking, I'd make a big pot of chili. I make a black bean chili. And I'll sit and eat that until it's gone a couple of days. But I make stir fry a lot. And it's usually a stir fry rice with whatever vegetables I have on hand. And just a little simple sauce. There's a great Chinese brown sauce in the Forks Over Knives cookbook that I make and use all the time.
I know. When you came to our live event, I think it might have been in Pasadena or someplace, you made, I think it was a pineapple tofu stir fry with the brown sauce. And then you're like, if anybody wants to come up, and oh my gosh, people stampeded. It was gone in less than 30 seconds. And everybody was like, I need more.
Yeah. But I do that. I think it's such a quick and easy dish. And if you're burnt out on cooking like I can be, stir fry is a 15 minute dinner.
And then
fresh fruit in the house right now. So if at night I get hungry, I'll eat some fruit before I go to bed.
Right. What's your fruit of choice?
I would eat, I call it the Brian Wendell diet. I would eat bananas until I die, but I love pineapple too.
Are you a fan of frozen fruit? Because I got a pile of frozen fruit that's a mile high in our freezer.
I love it. You know what? It's like dessert.
Yeah.
Take a piece of frozen mango or pineapple out and to chew on that.
Yep.
I'm all in for that. I'll back up a little bit about where my health is. Sitting on the couch for 2 years and that exhaustion was probably the worst mistake. Before I left the wellness forum, the year before that, I had been working out with a trainer 4 days a week, had lost 100 pounds. I was down to 275 pounds. Wow. I was able to run for the first time in decades. And then it stopped one day. Yeah. I don't know if it was part of the burnout or whatever it was, but that stopped. And I think the weight gain started happening and the whole mental thing just went kaput. And I had practically nervous breakdown one day and realized I needed to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but coming home and sitting for 2 years wasn't the right idea, because now I've been working with a physical therapist to heal back pain, mm-hmm. and get myself back to a place where I can be physically active.
Yeah. Do you know what your weight is these days?
Right around 400. So I'm 100 pounds less than my highest weight.
Right.
And grateful that I never made it back there. And I'll tell you what, I don't think I could weigh 500 pounds again without a wheelchair.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm closer to 60 than I am to 20 now. Big, big difference in what the body allows at this age.
Yeah. So what would you say? So somebody that's kind of in your shoes right now, they're, you know, over 100 pounds overweight. You know, their health is deteriorated. They may be staring at maybe prediabetes or, you know, hypertension, high cholesterol, maybe even heart disease, something like this. What's the big lesson here? Like what's the strategy? Is it finding a routine and like accountability
I think the one thing that people make the mistake of doing that I've made most of my life is, wanting immediate results and wanting it all to happen all at once. Mm. You've got to take this one day at a time, right? You've got to know what dinner is going to be tonight and find someone to cook for you, find someone to work with, find someone to share a meal with or whatever you need to do, but put a plan together and then wash, rinse, and repeat.
What are you most excited about right now? You know, it's almost June 2020. We've been in, you know, kind of quarantine now for a couple months. What's ahead for you?
I've got projects in the works, and I'm excited about what comes to the forefront. So it seems that that's just always going to be my nature, is to have something going on.
Yeah.
I think one of them that's going to happen sooner than later is my own online cooking school. I think that my perspective on cooking is unique, and I think I have something to offer, and I love teaching. So I think I'm going to make that happen, and I think I can do that sooner than later.
Wow. So, you know what? I think that sounds fantastic. I wish you all the well with it, all the best with that. And I look forward to, if it happens, sending a lot of people your way.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mandel, I appreciate the time today. I know that people are going to just fall off their chairs with all the great information. I want to thank you for sharing, you know, kind of your journey and some of your own personal struggles, because I think every one of us in some way has our own struggles that we're dealing with on a daily basis. So thank you for that.
I appreciate it, and I appreciate you doing what you do. I think getting the word out there, however we do it, that's important stuff.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's do our sign-off together, okay? So repeat after me. Peace. Okay. Peace. Engine two.
Engine two.
Plan strong. Give me a fist bump.
Plan strong. Amen.
All right, Del. We'll see you.
All right. Take care.
Okay. I hope you fired up that oven because I bet you're ready to roast some delicious and loving food after this chat with Chef Del Schroff. Much love and respect to you, Del, and thank you for your timeless contributions to the plant-based movement. You, my friend, have the heart of a hero, and your books and recipes have literally changed the lives of millions of people. We continue to support you on your own journey back to health, and know that we're rooting for you, Del. Next week, we continue the theme of healthy journeys, but it's all about our pets. Pet adoptions have skyrocketed as people have sought out companionship during COVID-19. The stories are heartwarming, and we want to make sure we extend that love and health to your new furry family member or your old furry family member. I'll be speaking with Dr. Ernie Ward, veterinarian and author of The Clean Pet Food Revolution, How Better Pet Food Will Change the World. Until then, remember, it all comes back to love and empathy for yourself and each other. We're all in this together. The Plant Strong podcast team includes Lori Kordowich, Amy Mackey, Patrick Gavin, Wade Clark, and Carrie Barrett. I want to thank my parents, Dr. Caldwell B. Esselstyn Jr. and Anne Cryle Esselstyn, for creating a legacy that will be carried on for generations and being willing to go against the current and trudge upstream to the causation. We are all better for it. I want to personally invite you to join me and all the other Brock stars for this year's 13th live and in-person Plant Stock event outside of Asheville, North Carolina, in the little town of Black Mountain. It's 1,500 acres, is loaded with wildlife, trees, trails, streams. It is a nature wonderland. And what's also a wonderland are all the incredible speakers that you get to hang with all weekend long, like Jane and Ann Esselstyn, Dr. Will Bolshewitz of Fiberfueled, Carly Bodrug, Miss Plant U, Dr. Gemma Newman is over from the UK. We have Dr. Dawn Musalem from the Mayo Clinic, John Mackey, the ex-CEO of Whole Food Market Stores, myself, Brian Hart, and a special appearance by the Plant Bros. Here's the kicker. All these Brock stars are there from Friday till Sunday, and they want to rub elbows with all of you, whether it's over buffets of Plant Strong fare for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, whether it's going on an afternoon hike, a swim, pickleball, frisbee golf, kickball, cornhole, dancing. We're having live music. It's all there in this fun weekend extravaganza that we affectionately call Plant Stock. Simply go to liveplantstrong.com and then click on Plant Stock 2024 and grab yourself a ticket before they sell out. See you there.